Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle so he can play football.
Coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
Welcome to the first episode of the Black and Gold Blitz. I'm your host, Chris Carter, with my co-host, Jeff Hartman. How's it going, my man, Jeff?
Oh, it's great, man. It's great to be here. Starting a new show. I think it's going to be awesome for all those diehard Pittsburgh fans. Let's get started, shall we?
Let's get it started. First, we're going to lead it off. This is going to be all about Pittsburgh sports. Let's talk about the top team in Pittsburgh sports that's doing right now, and that's those Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I think when you look at the Penguins, a lot of people are not really sure how to feel about this team, in my opinion. They're obviously in the second round. They're playing the best team in the NHL, in my opinion, in the Washington Capitals. Yet, they're up 2-1, but there's not too much excitement about this team after winning last night on Monday night when they barely squeak away with a 3-2 victory. And that third period just looked like a dumpster fire for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then Chris Letang comes out today. He gets suspended 1 game for his hit on Johansson from the Washington Capitals. My question for you, Chris, is when you heard 1 game, first of all, let me backtrack. Should there have been a suspension? Obviously there was, but in your opinion, should there have been a suspension? And if so, was 1 game too much, just right, or not enough? What do you think?
Yeah, there's so many factors to this. And I was listening. If you listen to the discussion of, like, the Pittsburgh sports writers after Orpik got suspended, they were talking about whether that was too much, whether this was that. You know, if you look at that hit, the hit that Letang put on Johansson, it's nothing like what Orpik did to Mata. And, you know, I would even say that I'm less mad about that, I'd be less mad about Letang's hit than what Wilson did to Sheary earlier in this series, and he never even got suspended. So, I mean, you know, I think that the NHL, I'm a proponent of the NHL cracking down on dumb hits, on things that, you know, are intended to injure. And I do think that with that was not a clean shot by Letang. But if we're calling it fair, you know, Sheary could have been put out for the playoffs. And Johansson came back in that game because some people say, you know, it seems like it's the NHL policy where if you hit somebody and they're out, that impacts your suspension, and that's you know, Johansson, he came right back in the game. So if we're talking about, you know, going by that, you know, I think that Letang shouldn't have been suspended and you should have took a hefty fine. But, you know, I'm okay with this suspension because I kind of get what the NHL is doing. What did you think when you heard that news?
Well, you know, you said you're a proponent of the NHL cracking down on high hits, on late hits, all that stuff, leading your feet, all those different factors that weigh into suspensions possibly when it comes to hits in the game of ice hockey. I'm a proponent of the NHL officials doing their freaking job for once. And what I'm saying is that when you saw Brooks Orpik hit Olli Maatta, how in the world does he only get a 2-minute interference penalty? That
yeah,
should be a major penalty. He could be ejected from the game. And if that would have happened, mind you, I truly believe his suspension wouldn't have been 3 games. But because they effed it up, all of a sudden now you're looking at it and saying, well, he played the rest of that game. You only gave him a 2-minute minor. And it's the same for Letang. Now, should Letang have been dismissed from the game and ejected? No. But but they could have given him a major penalty. They could have given him a 5-minute major, a misconduct penalty. I totally would have been warranted. And if they would have done that, there's a good chance he wouldn't be suspended. These officials, and if you follow certain people, you know, we're talking about guys like Dejan Kovacevic and things like that, they are constantly saying how the NHL is the best game run by the absolute worst group of guys that you could ever have. Gary Bettman is totally clueless. I thought one game was warranted. I thought that it was a dirty hit. It was unnecessary. That's the biggest thing. And I'm so sick and tired of Chris Letang acting like a little baby from time to time. You've seen this in the past from Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. But you watch Letang. He just can't let it go. He really cannot let it go. And if you want to win the Stanley Cup again, you're going to have to deal with some of this stuff. It's not going to be a cakewalk every time you walk on the ice. There's going to be people that are going to try to agitate you. There's players that do that intentionally, and you cannot respond. Now, the one thing that really frustrates me about this is that it's clouding this hit, the Orpik hit, is clouding what should be the NHL's marquee series right now in the postseason. And I don't understand. I mean, it's totally over. I mean, people are talking about the hits more than they are about the fact that these games have been great. Game one goes to overtime. Game two goes down to the wire. Game three goes down to the wire, even though the Penguins look like a dumpster fire at the end of the game where they basically were just staring at the clock hoping that the time ran out. That's what makes me mad. I've always said it, and I've said it on our other podcast about the football with NFL. I hate it when the officials are a narrative, and they certainly are in this series. What do you think?
I agree. It's annoying. It really doesn't. It seems like the NHL doesn't know how to, because it's dealing with conflicting crowds. Some people like the hit. Some people think that they're part of the game, that the fighting needs to happen. That, you know, that's, and I know people in that crowd that are just very pro old school hockey. Let them hack it out. You know, make the game tough. We don't want to soften it up, but it's not softening it up. It's honestly, it's being safe. You know, it's talking about, you know, we're trying to cut down on that and get to the actual playing of the game. Skating, playing defense, and you can. It's not saying that you can't hit, because you can hit. I mean, you saw Ovechkin going after people all night, and, you know, throwing hits. Some were questionable, but most of them were like, you know, hey, that's part of the game. He's trying to be aggressive. But when you throw headshots on guys that are defenseless, you know, and moving, and you have no reason to hit them towards the head, you know, that's the kind of stuff. But to your point about Letang and being a baby, I mean, look at when what was it, Hagelin, when he scored the third goal. Off the beautiful pass from Benino, he got back checked. Right, I mean, he took a stick right to the back. It was completely late. It, you know, it could have drawn a penalty, but he just slid. He was like, "Yeah, I scored a goal," and, you know, there was nothing made of it. He never, you know, made it a part of the narrative of the game. He just kept playing hard. So, you know, that's what I want to see, and I agree with Tank. Super talented player, but he's got to learn to keep his head, and that's part of the game in hockey, and that's. You know, that's been part of the strategy for so long, is to try and get inside players' heads and make them mad because you want to fight and make them want to fight you and stuff. And it's just like you gotta really crank that down if you want to take this team to stuff. Because the Penguins with the unit that they have right now, they only have so many more opportunities with Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Fleury. I mean, you love the new guys that are coming in, but, you know, the time is now. They need to strike while it's hot. They got a good group of young guys that have added speed to the team, and you know, this is not the time to get upset about things and do what he did to Johansson, and you know, drag those kind of things out. So
the thing about the NHL that frustrates me is that, just like you said, they're trying to eliminate some of these hits, yet they still want to promote the physicality of the game. If you really want to make the game safer, then you follow the NFL protocol. And that is, the quarterbacks are protected, the defenseless players, like the wide receivers over the middle, are protected, and that's the way you call it. And, yes, people get mad, they get frustrated, you know, put skirts on them, oh, my gosh, this isn't football anymore, it's basically flag. And the NFL is taking that criticism because they're saying, you know what, these are steps that we're going to take to make the game safer. So the NHL can't have their cake and eat it, too. They can't say, okay, we're going to eliminate these hits, yet we're going to also allow the cheap shots by, you know, on Hagelin after he scores, the guys that are basically punching each other behind the play, all these ridiculous plays. And honestly, if you're going to go that far, you might as well eliminate fighting from the game. And the purists hate that. They hate it because they hate the part of the game, all that garbage. But if you really want to make it safer, how are you going to say if you're going to make it safer when you allow two grown men to punch each other in the head repeatedly? And then they only sit in the box for 5 minutes. That's what I don't get. Yep. That's where the NHL is. They're at a crux. They're at a fork in the road right now. And it's which road are you going to take? Are you going to take the safety route? Are you going to take the this is the purest game, this blah, blah, blah crap? That's what pisses me off. Because ultimately, it comes down to you have these plays that are happening that are just as dirty as Letang's hit. It's just that Letang's hit was an open ice and the guy didn't have the puck anymore. So I get frustrated with the National Hockey League because of that stuff. But ultimately, it comes down to the fact that, in my opinion, this should be the marquee. And I think it is the marquee matchup. But Ovechkin, Crosby, Malkin, Backstrom, I mean, Fair playing against his former team. There's so many storylines, and we're not talking about that. Listen to what we've talked about since we've been on the air, Chris. It's not been about hockey. We haven't even talked about the fact that Game 3, Matt Murray had 47 saves. He almost
47 saves
in a hockey game. It's unbelievable, and yet it's not being discussed. It's not being discussed. We're talking about Orpik's three-game suspension. We're talking about Letang's suspension. We're talking about the horrible officiating. That's what bothers me.
And you're right. The Pens and the Caps have been rivals for years. I remember the HBO did the 24/7 series on them. What was it, the 2009 season? I mean, they've been a storyline.
Yeah.
Ovechkin and the Caps have hated Crosby and the Pens for years, and the hate from the Pens goes right back at them. They've had some great playoff series over the years, which the Penguins have won. But you know, it should be the story. And on the other side, like you said about Fair being playing the Caps, I mean, the two of the better defensemen for the Capitals in Orpik and Nishkin and our former Penguins. You know, there's so many ties between these teams. But like you said, the narrative right now is, oh, Orpik got suspended for three games. The very next game, oh, Letang's going to get suspended for a game. You know, the NHL is hurting itself. It has so much potential. Like, it's really an exciting game. But it bogs itself down in so much that it makes people who aren't fans of the game not want to watch as much. You know, they don't get into it until playoff time, and then when you're in playoffs, you're dealing with this kind of stuff, and it dilutes itself, its own product, which is why the Stanley Cups can't get a higher rating on TV than the NFL draft. So I mean, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that plays into that, but I think that's been hurting the league and its viewership and how it's perceived in the professional sports world. You know, that's why hockey, you know, I've heard hockey fans complain for years, why doesn't ESPN cover us as much? You know, the NBA playoffs get more attention. You know, the MLB regular season and the playoffs get a lot of attention. The NFL gets all the attention. But, you know, NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup Finals were on a random channel called Versus up until a few years ago. And that's, you know, the NHL really has to, I think, crack down and decide, you know, what do we want this game to be about and stop trying to teeter between two crowds. But you know what? Let's get into, like, talking about the hockey. You know, I do think that the Pens are going to end up winning this series. Of course, I'm a homer. You're a homer. We're all homers if you're probably listening to this. But I'm, you know, I'm loving the way that I'm seeing them hustle, except for that third period last night. I'm loving the way that I'm seeing them go after the puck, going, you know, charging. They seem to be getting back on defense, making stops when, you know, times I had become accustomed to the Pens not making stops, not helping out their goalie, and leaving them in tougher situations. What are you seeing them do differently this year around in the playoffs compared to more recent playoff runs?
I mean, in my opinion, it comes down to one thing, and the Penguins' defense right now, and you take Letang off, good luck trying to fill that role, by the way. The guy plays over 30 minutes a game. I mean, the Penguins are going to, if they can win the next game at home and they hold serve at home and they're up 3-1 going back into D.C., I really like their chances. But if they lose the next game and it's tied up, I think we're in for a 7-game series. But what they're doing differently is that their defense is not like this unbelievable blue line that just stymies the offenses they're approaching. They have good neutral zone defense. They play their system well. What the difference is offensively. Number one is speed. They actually have speed now. Think back to when they played the Bruins in the Eastern Conference Finals. They were literally getting lapped. The fastest players on the team were Sidney Crosby. He is a fast skater. He's not a world beater in that area, but he is a fast player. And Tyler Kennedy. That was it. After that, they had no one with any amount of speed that could push the puck and really get that defense turning going backwards. Now, totally different story. They've got Hagelin. They've got Kessel, who, although he looks like a guy that just left the bar, when they called last call every time you see him on the screen. He can skate.
Right.
He's a very good skater. You've got all these young guys, Connor Sheary, Two Knuckle, Rust if he comes back. Even Matt Cullen is showing some wheels for a guy that's going to be like almost 40 years old, that seems like, coming up soon. What I'm trying to say is that the number one thing is they have team speed, and that's really important. Number two, it's no longer just Crosby's line and Malkin's line. Think back to all those playoff failures they had against the Rangers, how they struggled with the Columbus Blue Jackets. If you stop Crosby's line and you stop Malkin's line, you beat the Penguins. Because after that, who was going to score goals? No one was. Now they have
David Sutter.
They have all these pieces of the puzzle that are falling in together. You've got that beautiful line with Bonino and Kessel and Hagelin. You've got Malkin and Fair and Kunitz. You've got Crosby and Hornquist and Sheary. And then even that fourth line with Cullen and Kunockel and those guys. They've got four lines. Good luck defending that. That's all I'm saying. And that's where I give the edge to Pittsburgh in this series, is because even the Capitals, as great as they are offensively, they don't have the firepower that Pittsburgh does. Now, the question is can Pittsburgh play a better style of game than they did in Game 3? I would hope so, because I think everyone in the building, everyone that watched knew they're much better than that showing, and yet they still won the hockey game. I'll take an ugly win over a pretty loss any day of the week. So that's my take on it. They actually have more than one line and team speed, man. These guys can skate, and that's what's fun to watch.
Indeed it is. And I'll tell you what, I love seeing that the Penguins, are when they get after it, and their attack just seems so much smoother. And I'll tell you what, you've been talking about the players. Bonino is becoming my favorite, I guess I wouldn't call him unsung because people have recognized his play in the playoffs, but he's not a big name. He's not a household name for most people, and he has made some of the biggest plays in the playoffs. That pass that he got to Hagelin around the goalie, oh, my goodness. I was watching. I was like, how did he do that? It's so ridiculous. And he's done stuff like that, you know, throughout this series and the first series. You know, it's been really fun to watch these guys play. I'm loving seeing the hustle, and you're right, the speed is just there. And it seems like anytime the Penguins are on the ice, there's a problem. You know, not that there's a problem for us, but there's a problem. The head of the other team's got to be thinking, all right, we gotta defend this, we gotta defend that, we gotta be on our toes because these guys can come at us right now. And you're right, back in the day, you know, back in the day was a few years ago. Or even last year, but you know the Sidney Crosby is out there. Okay, Malkin's out there. Okay, now all we gotta do is really worry about those two guys and their line. You know, back in the Chris Kunitz and James Neal days, you know those were some good lines. You know, Pascal Dupuis was a good player, but you need more than just a few top heavy. You need a roster that's not top heavy. You need a fully balanced roster. I think that's what we're seeing right now with the Penguins. You know, I certainly hope that they can keep it up. They've been hot, you know, in the second half of the season, and now they're hot. It seems like they're pretty hot in the playoffs. And I mean, really, while you could say that the Capitals have been an inch away in the past two games, you know, they are one over the overtime goal from being 3-0 in Pittsburgh right now. And, you know, I know that can go here or there, but it speaks volumes to the team that I remember listening to 93.7 The Fan here in Pittsburgh during the regular season, like probably at the midway point of the season, I think like right around the All-Star break, and they said, you know, if the Penguins do make the playoffs, they're going to have to face the Capitals in the first round, and they're going to get destroyed. There's no way they can hang with this team. They just can't. And now we're sitting here 2-1. They got to play in Pittsburgh tomorrow night in Consol. And they could the Penguins have a chance to go back to Game 5, to Washington for Game 5 up 3-1. If they make that happen, it changes everything, and I think it's going to put the whole world back on notice that Sidney Crosby and the Penguins are here to work. So I'm
absolutely
excited, man.
And, you know, you bring up Bonino, and people have looked at the general manager Jim Rutherford. Like, he's got eight heads with some of the decisions that he made. When he traded David Perron to Anaheim for Carl Hagelin, people are like, really? That's worked out great. The one trade that no one's really thinking about is when he sent Brandon Sutter to Vancouver for a guy named Nick Bonino, and everyone's like, wait, who? What? Why? Because they like Sutter.
Right.
He's a fiery guy. He played that third line, fourth line center well. it's paying its dividends now, isn't it? You said it yourself. He's become one of your favorite players. He's a hard worker. He's a great centerman. He's good at takeoffs. Just sometimes, and this goes across the board from the Penguins to the Steelers to the Pirates, sometimes you have to trust that they're going to make the right move and it's going to pay off, and it has. And I'll tell you what, tomorrow night, I believe the game is at 7:15. Pens, Caps, Game 4, it doesn't get any better than this. They could really, really, really put a clamp on this series if they get 3-1 and going back to the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. Hey, I live in Maryland, Chris. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I want this series bad. I'm surrounded by Capitals fans every single day of my life, and I want this series to be over early. I'll say Pens in 6. That's my early prediction because, hey, you never know. Next time we're on the air, Chris, this thing could be wrapped up with a nice little bow on top. What do you think about that?
I think that's awesome. Personally, so if you're saying Pens in 6, I'm going to beat you to it and say Pens in 5. They're winning tomorrow night, and they're closing it out in D.C. You're going to be cheering all amongst. Don't do nothing crazy, Jeff. We don't need you getting in a fight. but you guys are going to be able to cheer all over Maryland, all over D.C. Go to the Capitol, you know, celebrate there, and watch as Game 5, the Penguins are going to send the Capitals home, and they'll have to settle for another year without having a shot at the Cup. I'm going to out-homer you in saying that the Penguins are going to come in here and do that work. But, we were earlier, we were talking about, you know, the penalties and what happens when you break the rules in the NHL. Well, sometimes in life you have situations where you break the laws, Jeff. And I'll tell you what, when it comes to that situation, it's scary because you don't know how to handle it. It's not an NHL coming at you with a suspension. It's a judge coming. It's the judge or the DA coming at you with some problems. And I'll tell you what, if you're in the Western Pennsylvania area or Western Virginia, there's no other lawyer to call than Frank Walker at Frank Walker Law. Frank Walker is one of the top criminal defense attorneys in the country. In fact, he's ranked in the top 100 trial attorneys in the nation. He has a Pennsylvania office and a West Virginia office. He's been handling there. If you go to his website at frankwalkerlaw.com, you can see everything he's done. He's been in the news. He's represented some great people, and he sponsors this show. He likes our work, and he wanted us to support BehindTheSteelCurtain.com as well as, you know, our podcast series. So we thank him for doing that. But Frank Walker, you know, in my experience with him, I'm a young aspiring attorney. Everything that he's done has been noticed. If you want to call his office in Pennsylvania, you can call 412-212-3878. Again, his office in Pennsylvania is 412-212-3878. His West Virginia office, you can call 304-712-2089. And that's Frank Walker Law. He provides real talk, real experience, and real results. So we thank Frank Walker, but we're going to move forward for our next topic, which is going to be one of our favorites, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Jeff, you know, we just got done doing a lot of work for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com about this thing that everyone calls the NFL draft. And, you know, it's one of those things that it's like a wedding. You get done, you have to plan for it for so long, but then eventually you get to the big day, and you just want it to be over. You're just like, oh my gosh, just please come on, just make all these picks. We can know who we have, and we can just get the season. And you know, it came and went, but you know, everyone has their own opinions. What is your opinion, Jeff, on the picks of, you know, first Artie Burns being the top cornerback, and then the Steelers went to address the secondary early, but they didn't get any of the players that everyone was raving about before the draft.
Well, let's go through the draft picks one by one. You and I will both give our opinions on them, whether we thought it was a reach. I don't like giving grades, although everyone does it. We do it at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. I don't think that that's necessarily justifiable, because how is Mel Kiper Jr. going to be able to tell me how Artie Burns is going to look in 2016 when he hasn't even played a snap inside that system? Yeah, what he did in college might not have meshed well with what the Steelers are going to do. That doesn't mean that he can't learn. He's not an intelligent person, okay? So let's talk about Artie Burns, okay? So I get to be honest with you, Chris, you were my right-hand man this weekend, weekend with the NFL draft. It is crazy. It is hectic. It's chaotic. I'm driving home from my game. I'm a coach. and I'm driving home, and I'm sitting in a red light, and I'm listening to the NFL draft on the radio, and I hear the Pittsburgh Steelers on the clock, and immediately my mind's racing. Which prospects are already off the board? We knew Eli Apple got drafted earlier, a couple other names that they had looked at, and were already off the board. Billings is still there. Andrew Billings of Baylor. And so I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, they're going to take Billings. This is going to be great. We're going to get the articles up there. It's going to be awesome. Behind the steel curtain is going to explode because everyone likes Andrew Billings. No one thought he'd be there at 25. And then they say, here comes the commissioner. Commissioner comes out with the 25th overall draft pick. The Pittsburgh Steelers pick Artie Burns, cornerback of University of Miami. And I literally put my head into my hands and said, what the heck did they just do? Because let's be honest, I'm not going to lie and say that I know so much about Artie Burns, that I did so much research and watched film of him that I had a justifiable knee-jerk reaction. The question is, I didn't know that much about him that I was like, I don't know anything about this guy. So you do some digging. Artie Burns, what's he like? Well, he's young. That's the first thing that popped out. He just turned 21 years old. Very mature for his age. Mother passed away in October. He took control or took custody of his two younger brothers, has a child of his own. He's a very mature individual. Now, with that being said, he's super athletic. He's a track star. He has a really good 40 time. He's very physical, sometimes to a detriment, but at the same time, he also has good ball skills, had 6 interceptions in 2015. The more and more I look at the pick, the more and more I like the pick. It's one of those where you have to say, well, it could work out. It could blow up in their face, but you got to trust the system, kind of like what we talked about in the NHL when we're talking about Jim Rutherford. The Steelers know what they're doing, and when Kevin Colbert says he's one of the best press man-to-man coverage teams, people automatically think that's a bad scheme fit. They run more zone stuff. But that doesn't mean they can't transition into more of a prompt man-to-man style defense. Technically, what's the number one – I'll ask you this question, Chris. What's the number one complaint that we get at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com in regards to defensive backs pre-snap?
Defensive back pre-snap. I had to mute the button real quick. But if you're asking me what people complain about, it's that they're 5'9" and they can't handle the bigger receivers and the tight end.
No, man, they always complain that they are off the line too much. They play too much cushion, so they get a cornerback that specializes.
Right.
Okay, they could get a cornerback that specializes in getting up in their face, being physical at the line of scrimmage, and people are all up in arms about it. I thought it was a good pick. If I'm grading it out, I'm going to say he was probably the end of that first tier of cornerbacks. They got it. They filled a need. Were there other prospects that could have been their pick? Yes. I'm going to give it a solid. Well, I'm going to give it a grade anyway because people love that stuff. I'll give it a B. What do you think?
I'm with you. I'm on the B level for this pick. I think I gave it like a B minus on the night of the draft, simply because I had seen Artie Burns on the board. Like I didn't really look up his film too much because I just didn't think we'd be going after him. I thought if we would go after a corner, it would have been one of the top corners on the board, and that if those top corners were off the board, we would have went and selected the best player available for the defensive front. And like I honestly was racing my mind because I thought A'shaun Robinson would be gone. And we had our pick between A'shaun Robinson and Andrew Billings. And, you know, there were so many other options there. I was like, man. And then when they said Artie Burns, I'm watching that in the first game of the Penn-Cats series. And I'm sitting here like, what is this? You know, I'm like, what do you mean, Artie Burns? No. That was one person because, like, literally I had different things typed up in the queue for our articles to go up, and Artie Burns was one of – I thought I had everything planned out, but once again, the Steelers showed me that they – just because you write all this stuff, just because you think and you mock draft 1,000 times doesn't mean Jack Doodley squat when it comes to picking what actually happens and what Kevin Colbert sees. But here's what I do like about the pick, and I was talking about this with a few other people yesterday. Artie Burns – He's a big athlete. He's physical. He's young, and he's someone that, you know, may not fit the mold that right away that you're looking for because he has a lot of development to do and he doesn't have all the fundamentals. But that should remind people of something that the Steelers did 2 years ago when they picked Ryan Shazier over C.J. Mosley. C.J. Mosley was the perfect mold for a middle linebacker. Everyone said he was the top middle linebacker prospect.
because Alabama, he was already fit. He already had everything there. He was a technically sound player, yada, yada, yada. Now, he wasn't the fastest. He wasn't the strongest, but he seemed to have the best all-around grade for a linebacker at the time. And he won Defensive Rookie of the Year, in his rookie year. But Steelers went and selected Brian Shazier, a faster player, a player that had more flash and possibly a higher ceiling than what C.J. Mosley had because of his athleticism. And so far, I kind of graded even because Mosley didn't really had somewhat of a sophomore slump, and I think he even got injured halfway into the season. He won the rookie award, but Shazier, while he didn't win an award in his second year in the league, he lit it up, and he changed the Steelers' defense. He had some key plays during the regular season. He had that interception against the Broncos that helped turn the tide late. And then, of course, he forced two crucial turnovers against the Bengals in the wild card round of the playoffs. And he ultimately changes the Steelers' defense. And that's something that you did by drafting athleticism and going after that and not trying to fit a player into a mold. You know what I'm saying? So when they're looking at that, I think that's what they're seeing with Artie Burns. You got a guy who's fast, he's physical, and they're going to be able to say, look, you're young, you just turned 21, like literally a few days ago, and that's kind of the same situation they have Le'Veon Bell. If they got Le'Veon Bell in, then they picked him up when he was 21. So I think Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert are excited because now you have, if this guy does develop into the top tier talent that his ceiling says he could be, I mean, what? That's 10 years of a really good corner, of an athletic guy on the outside that can shut down receivers. That's a great pickup. But like we all know, these draft grades mean absolutely nothing. When you go out 4 years from now and you got to decide whether to sign them to the fifth year option. And speaking of fifth year options, we'll get to Jarvis Jones in a bit, because I'm pretty sure if you graded Jarvis Jones when he was first picked, he would have received an A+ because he was the top pick then. But we'll get into Jarvis Jones more later. But what was your opinion of the second pick for the Steelers when they went after the safety from Maryland?
Well, it was more backlash from the fan base first. Not because they didn't like the pick. It was because they didn't know who it was. I understand that people that read BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, people that read ESPN.com, all those websites, they get very familiar with certain names. One of those names was Von Bell from Ohio State. Another name was Andrew Billings from Baylor, and both of those players were available when the Steelers took their second-round pick in the number 58 spot, I believe. And then they say Sean Davis, and immediately people go online and they start Googling Sean Davis, and Pro Football Focus pops up and talks about how he was one of the worst coverage cornerbacks in the land in 2015. What they didn't realize, because they didn't do enough digging, is that Sean Davis was playing out of position. It wasn't until Carnell Lake stepped up to the podium or at the press conference and said, he's not going to be a cornerback for us, he's going to be a safety. And when I heard that, I said, now this starts to make sense. His poor coverage grade was because he's not a cornerback. He's a safety.
Right.
He has coverage skills that of a safety. Safeties are rarely going to be playing man-to-man, one-on-one coverage in most defensive schemes. I'm sure there's the exception, but that's not what we're talking about. What he could be, because he has the size, he has the length, he has the speed, and again, athleticism and versatility. You're going to hear those two words a lot when we talk about this draft. I like this pick. He's a kid that I think, as people have asked me this multiple times, out of all the draft picks, who could see the field the most in 2016? My answer is always Sean Davis, and that has a lot to do with his potential. It also has a lot to do with the lack of depth at the safety position for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That doesn't mean he's going to start, but I think if there's going to be one that's going to see the field on a regular basis with a rotation, it's Sean Davis. I like the pick. I thought it was a great pick. It filled another need, but it gives them more athleticism, more speed. What you're seeing is the Steelers are slowly putting together one of the fastest defenses in the National Football League. What were your thoughts, Chris?
I thought one thing that I looked at, because I did recognize Sean Davis. I didn't think that we'd pick him. But I did recognize the name. If you look at his profile, like you said, he's big. He's 6'1", he's 201 pounds. That's a great size for a safety in the NFL. He runs a 4.46. But notice, when we're talking about things that make a safety good, he has power to go up against bigger players because he had one of the best bench press reps in the combine with 21 reps, and he has the explosiveness. He had one of the best broad jumps when he jumped for 126 inches during the combine. You're looking at a guy that not only was he a good student in the classroom, but he's explosive. And you know, people have been trying to measure that over the years. I think one website called it Spark. I'm not forget which website it is right now, but people have been trying to measure more than just flat line speed, more than just the football. You want to measure how good is a player at getting up, starting and stopping, and you know, working in short spaces, which is something that you see in Antonio Brown. He's amazing when it comes to getting in and out of his breaks, making cuts where he needs to cut, and he has amazing football speed. But at flat line speed, you know, at straight line speed, you know, against Marcus Wheaton and Darius Heyward-Bey and Martavis Bryant, he's the slowest of the group, but he's the best of the group. You'd say he's the most explosive outside of Martavis Bryant because, you know, most people aren't explosive as Martavis Bryant. But, I think that the Steelers, like you said, they're building that kind of a defense. Ryan Shazier, you know, he can get from point A to point B so fast, and he changes direction so quickly. If you go back and look at our – we did a top 15 plays of the year on Behind the Steel Curtain. If you Google that, I think one of the big ones – I think it was like ranked number 5 or number 4 was his huge hit on Giovanni Bernard in the playoffs that forced a fumble that changed the game. When you looked at that play, he was backing up playing a hook curl zone when Bernard caught it in the flat. In 7 yards, he was able to close it so ridiculously fast that Bernard couldn't even really get himself situated and brace for the impact the way that he wanted to. That's what Ryan Shazier brought. That's what they're trying. That's what they're trying to bring to the table here with Sean Davis from Maryland. This guy is going to be explosive. If he can be the safety that Carnell Lake is going to train to be. If he can play like Carnell Lake, first of all, that's going to be amazing. But if he can be the guy that brings the pain, hits hard, and can jump on a ball with that explosiveness, this defense is going to be that much more of a problem. So I'm excited about Sean Davis. I think we gave him a B- because actually I wasn't able to give that grade because I was busy at the time. We had one of our reliable guys, Nate. He was on board that night, and he was the one giving the grade. But you know, Sean Davis, I like it. Again, not a household name. Just that's the same thing that I said with Artie Burns. These are two guys that you didn't talk about much before the draft, and this, a lot of fans, like you said, Jeff, they were on our board screaming, man, what are the Steelers doing? They're destroying this. This is horrible, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I'm okay with these picks right now because they seem to have the measurements, but we just got to see how they pan out. But moving forward, the third-round pick, they finally addressed that defensive tackle position, and it wasn't Andrew Billings, and he was on the board. That was one of the biggest surprises to me, that we did not see Andrew Billings the board, and we saw them pick Javon Hargrave out of South Carolina State University. I was kind of surprised that they picked him, but I was happy that they picked him because Hargrave was a really good athlete. He's extremely strong, extremely quick for a guy his size. He comes from a historically black college and university. Steelers, we have a history of picking great players from HBCU. There's an article on that coming out tomorrow morning on our website. But, you know, there was a lot of things to like about Hargrave. What did you like about the Hargrave pick?
Well, you know, as the editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, I participate in the SB Nation, what they call the writer's mock draft. And what they do is they have every editor for every NFL website, they do go through a two-round mock draft process. In the first round, I took William Jackson III, who obviously went the 24th pick to the Bengals. In the second round, I actually took Javon Hargrave from South Carolina State University. You watch this guy, and I loved what Coach Mitch said about him after they made the selection. He goes, look, I know that he didn't play against the best competition, but what he did against that competition speaks for itself. He said, you'll see some guys that will play down to their competition, that will struggle against lesser opponents. He said, this guy completely annihilated everyone that he went against. I mean, his stack totals were just absurd. Throughout his college career, especially in 2015, he is not the biggest guy. He's not the in terms of height and weight, he's 6'1". He is 309 pounds. He's a big guy, but he's not like a Stephon Tudor, Cameron Hayward. Now, the one thing that he does have is he is fast. He is still very quick. They're going to have to put him in the right spots. A lot of people think that Hargrave is going to be able to step on the field and be able to play right away. I don't think he's the nose tackle for the team. I still think that's Daniel McCullers. I think Hargrave is going to be a sub-package specialist for him. He'll be able to rush the passer from the interior. He'll be able to spell Stephon Tudor, hopefully, and Cameron Hayward, so that they don't have to play somewhat of 90% of the defensive snaps anymore. I like the pick a lot. Obviously, if I had him in the second round in our mock draft and they get him in the third, I consider that a steal. I give this pick an A, and I know there's a lot of potential there. And that's a scary word because you don't always live up to the potential, but I think in this case, he seems like a really good kid, a really hard worker. The Steelers are excited. He's excited. That's a good recipe for success. I like Hargrave. I think that's a great pick. What do you think?
I think it's a great pick, too. Like I said, I'm excited. You know, first of all, HBCU players get me excited because I'm from the first HBCU, Cheney University, 1837. But, you know, when you're talking about Hargrave, he's coming into this team. You're right. Last year, Stephon Tuitt and Cameron Hayward, our defensive end, were on the field every play for the defense. It was ridiculous. And it was great because both are really good players. I'd even say Cameron Hayward's a great player. But, you know, if one of them goes down, that becomes a problem. And if at one point Stephon Tuitt did go down and Steve McClendon had to switch to end and the team had to rely on Cam Thomas being a D tackle, which wasn't the best thing in the world. Well, he did better this year than in past years. But with this pick, if Hargrave can develop into a guy the Steelers can rely on, then that gives you three options on the front end. Then you can spell Hayward. Then you can spell Tuitt. Give them some breathers, and if he can become a prime pass rusher as well as a run stuffer, then we can. Then you have a guy that'll help shut down the run, and you still have Dan McCullers to worry about. You know the tall shade tree that plays defensive tackle. You know he's going to be vying for that starting nose tackle spot, and he may even just get it. But you know I'm all for the pick because, like I said, it'll add to the rotation of guys that can play defensive end in the 3-4 system. And it makes it so that when the Steelers go shotgun, they don't have just two guys that they can work with. They might have three, you know, depending on how fast this guy develops, because you never know. But I was fine with the A grade that you gave because on our big board that we had at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, we ranked him as a late first round pick with the talent that he showed and all the tape that we were able to find. Especially with you know the defensive front players that were available in the draft, you know some players like you go to NFL.com, they'll say he was a third or fourth round pick. But as far as you know, talking to like you know people that study the game real hard and you know that are looking for like the hard nose type player and do the digging, you know a lot of people are saying this guy could go in the second, this guy could go in the you know in the early parts of the third, and I think he was a real good steal. This year, you know, and you know, still a lot of people were still mad. Why didn't we take Andrew Billings? But you know, this guy seems to be more of a three-down player, and Billings is more of that two-down player. So I think that's the biggest difference. Now, moving forward, we're gonna lump all together the last four rounds for the Steelers, the last four picks. They didn't have a fifth round pick because of the Brandon Boykin trade, which people were raving over all season long, especially because we wouldn't start him. But when the Steelers kit came in, they picked up the offensive tackle from LSU and Hawkins, and they picked up. They missed the fifth round. They got Feely, the linebacker from Washington. Then they went and got a punt returner and Ayers from Houston, and then they went and got for their last pick of the draft in the seventh round Matakovic. Is that how you pronounce his name? Matakovic? I can't remember.
I have no idea, no clue.
Yeah, because I heard it and I was like, got it. I had it locked in, and then like a day went by and I forgot it.
But he was the Nagurski Winner Award. He was the best linebacker in college football, which means really diddly squat when it comes to those type of awards, because Michael Sam got best, you know, SEC Player of the Year, and we saw how he turned out. But they were, to me, the later round picks, they seem like, you know, potential depth players. I think that the picking of Hawkins is really a Gerald Hawkins. It should be like the ultimate sign to Mike Adams that if you don't get it together, you're done, you know, and that we'll send you out into free agency. I'm not sure anyone would even want to give this guy a chance because he's been nothing but trouble. But I like Feely. I like and I like Mikatovic, Martakovic. I like those picks. They give us special teams linebackers because we lost Sean Spence and Terrence Garvin in free agency. And not that they were great players, but they were, like, really good role players I thought were going on special teams. And they were cool guys that you could bring in if Timmons and Vince Williams and Shazier needed a rest. So, you know, that was how I thought about the later picks. The punt returner they got in there, they said he was his 40 time was messed up because he had a broken hand during the combine. You know, but I'm like, seventh-round pick, you know, whatever. We'll see what we get out of him. What was your interpretation of the last four picks?
I'll just quickly on all of them. I think Hawkins is a project. I think if they didn't have Mike Munchak as their offensive line coach, he's not going to pan out. But with him, I mean, this is a kid that at LSU, which is a very good offensive line school, by the way. That's where Alan Faneca came from. He started at the right tackle spot his first 2 years. Then they flipped him over to the left tackle, and then he entered the NFL draft. This guy has a ton of experience. I think Munchak will be able to mold him into a really good, at least a swing tackle, potentially a starting tackle. It's a good positive. That was a good pick. The one pick I really like, though, is Travis Feeney from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You were calling him Feely. It's Feeney. And,
Sorry.
Don't apologize to me. It's not my name. Feeney, he is a guy that I was really shocked because we know that the Steelers have an outside linebacker coach in Joey Porter and an inside linebacker coach in, Jerry Olszewski. Okay, and so when they send these coaches in to speak to the media, they said they just picked Travis Feeney from Washington. Here comes Joey Porter. And I'm thinking, wait, what? This kid is not a typical outside linebacker build. He's 6'4". He's super fast. He only weighs 230 mm-hmm. pounds, though. For that frame, that's not a lot of weight. And
right.
So I watched some film on him, and he really doesn't – he's basically a speed rusher. And so I was thinking to myself, how are they going to use this kid? I don't think they're going to use him in a 3-4. Like, he's not going to look like James Harrison coming off the edge. He's not that type of player. I think what they're looking for is this guy can run. He ran a 4.5 40-yard dash. He had a 40-inch vertical jump and a ridiculous broad jump. So what are they going to do with him? He's going to be a sub-package specialist, in my opinion. I think that you can think about it at a time, even if they run a 4-3 front where they have three linebackers, think about Timmons in the middle and then Shazier and Feeney on the outside. That is a really, really, really fast set of linebackers right there. And even if Timmons is on the outside on one side and Shazier is in the middle, that's, I think, the role that they have for him. And they're leaning more towards sub-package football anyways. I think this guy's really intriguing. I'm not saying he's going to be good. I'm not saying I was a huge fan of the pick, but he's very, very intriguing. Ayers, spending a draft pick on a guy that's only going to be a punt returner for you, that just shows that they don't want Antonio Brown back there. If he can pan out, good for you. You got to be able to play a wide receiver role in special teams outside of that, though. And then the linebacker from Temple, I'll take a stab at this name. Matakovic? I don't know. Maybe not.
Matakovic,
anyway,
that's fair.
Yeah. Sure, that sounds right. What the heck? I think that he's a kid that it could come in and be a special teams ace right away. He's that guy that it looks like he's just going to out-hustle every single person on that field. He might not be the most talented, but he's going to outwork everybody, and that's exciting. And so I think that the Steelers had a good draft. I mean, people want to bash it. People want to give it low grade. I think it was just average. They met their needs. They're not drafting in the early portions of the round. Everyone's talking about how Jacksonville just blew up the draft. Well, Jacksonville sucks. No wonder they're getting all these good picks. Pittsburgh's drafting 25th, people. What do you expect? They're not going to have guys that are going to step on the field and just start at 25. That's just not the way it works. So, in my opinion, good draft. Thumbs up for those guys. Now it's up to the coaches because they're all very raw. All of these players are very raw. If the coaches can coach them up, this team, and I should say this defense, is going to be good. But, Chris, you know, that's not the only news that was going on this week. A lot of other stuff has happened. As of 12 o'clock at midnight last night, Jarvis Jones' fifth-year option was not picked up. The Steelers spotted Bruce Gradkowski for a one-year contract. They're getting ready for their rookie minicamp coming up on the 6th, I believe. All this stuff going on, what are your thoughts on those moves as well as maybe some other moves post-draft that the Steelers might, you know, have coming up that you might, like the Jarvis Jones deal? I mean, not picking up a fifth-year option, that has some consequences. What do you think about all that stuff?
Well, I'll get the light one out the way first. Bruce Gradkowski being signed to a one-year deal is just a sign to Landry Jones that we do not trust you here in Pittsburgh. And then if you want a long-term job here as a backup and someday become like a Mark Malone-type starter after Ben Roethlisberger's career is over, you better pick it up now. Because Bruce Gradkowski, he knows the system. He's an okay backup. He's your journeyman guy. You know, that he's like, he's going to be like, I think he's going to be this generation's Charlie Batch. He's going to stick around for a while. He's from Pittsburgh, so he's a hometown hero, much like Charlie Batch. And, you know, he knows the system. He came in the playoffs against the Ravens, did okay. And, you know, I'm all for bringing him back because it gives us three quarterbacks to work with. It's obvious that they're not going to bring Michael Vick back. And now Landry Jones in this situation. All right, I got to get better. I got to know the playbook. I got to stop making crucial mistakes. And it's going to be, you know, sink or swim for him. And I think that he'll be fine. Like, you know, if the Steelers don't re-sign him, which I don't expect them to after this season, I think he'll get picked up somewhere and still have a job in the NFL. But if he wants for that job to be in Pittsburgh, he's going to need for that to pick up right now in this training camp for this upcoming season, because this is the last year of his rookie contract. So that's the whole reason Bruce Gradkowski was picked up, my opinion. But the big move of not signing Jarvis Jones, to me, had so many implications to it. When you're talking about the Steelers, you're talking about a team that we live off the pass rush. That is one of the favorite things that our fans have loved over the years. Blitzburg, the 3-4 pass rushers, we've had so many great ones. And Greg Lloyd, James Harrison, Joey Porter, Lamar Woodley, you know, guys that have crushed people in crucial situations and provided legendary moments. Jarvis Jones, he's had like one big moment that was really in the playoffs when he sacked A.J. McCarron this year. But, I mean, he has not been the impact player that he was supposed to be. Remember when we drafted him in 2013? We weren't supposed to be able to get him. He was projected by some to be a top 10 pick because he was a dominant 3-4 outside linebacker for Georgia. So he played SEC ball. He was really good. He was there for all 4 years. Seemed like the perfect breed for an outside linebacker. And he just hasn't been the physical presence that everyone thought he would be. He didn't have a great combine that year, but people overlooked that. We said, hey, you know, this is the guy, he knows how to play outside linebacker. He's going to fit in the mold. He hasn't fit in the mold for the most part. I will say this. He has gradually improved over the years. His technique has definitely gotten better, especially since now that Joey Porter works with outside linebackers specifically, and the Steelers now have two sets of linebacker coaches and Jerry Olsowski with the middle linebackers and Joey Porter with the outside linebackers. And I think you saw more consistency with Jones and Dupree. They were able to turn runs back to the inside. They didn't give up their outside shoulder nearly as much. And that really helped them turn back out the stretch runs, which used to be a huge problem with Jason Worlds out there. But now you're looking at Jarvis Jones. You know, the reason he doesn't have the sack numbers. He's not creating enough pressure on his own. You know, and he makes some plays. He's around the play now and then. We even did a film study about a week or two ago on him that talked about both his run-stopping plays and his pass rush, and he's just not the physical presence. So if you're talking about a guy that you want to pay $8 million after this season for a fifth-year extension, he's not it. You know, maybe he would be it if he showed some more promise and we didn't have all these other guys we have to pay. But the Steelers are a loaded team when it comes to young players. We still have to pay Le'Veon Bell. We still have to re-sign Antonio Brown to an extension. We still gotta get David DeCastro. There's so many players that we gotta work on to make sure that they're here for the long haul, and that's not including Ryan Shazier and Stephon Tuitt, who are coming up right after Jarvis Jones. And all that being said, overlooks the whole point of Lawrence Timmons' extension, which is a major topic of discussion. I'll let you talk about that more, Jeff, because that's one of the things that's been a storyline all offseason, and the Steelers have still yet to address it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the extension of a lot of contracts, maybe Castro and Le'Veon Bell, and possibly giving Lawrence Timmons an extension, and maybe restructuring Ben Roethlisberger and Marquise Pouncey's contract, and all these players, that's going to be a topic that we'll hold for another show, because it's just so much to deal with. But to answer your question, Jarvis Jones, a lot of people on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com today, when I wrote an article kind of relating to that, they said, well, why wouldn't the Steelers just offer him a contract? Well, yeah, the Steelers could offer him a contract, but why in the world would he sign it? They just said, we don't want your fifth-year option because we don't want to pay you $8 million. So for the Steelers, if they would somehow get him to sign a very mediocre contract, yeah, that would be great for the team. But for the player as a business, that's a stupid decision. You got to bet on yourself.
Right.
Go out there, ball out your contract year, and either force their hand for a big deal or go somewhere else. So Jarvis Jones' situation is a little bit more dire than people might think, because James Harrison's going back for 1 year, as he said, and then if he leaves, Jarvis Jones leaves, the cupboard's pretty bare. You have Anthony Chiquillo, Bud Dupree, Arthur Moses, Feeney for the rookies from Washington, as your only outside linebackers on the roster. That's not going to cut it. So you mentioned this earlier. I know we talked off the air. Free agency could be an answer. We'll see. But you know what the funny thing is, Chris, with all these different teams, you know, obviously the draft picks are in. You know, everyone's talking about the Steelers. The Penguins are hot. They're in the playoffs. The Pirates, believe it or not, got off to a great start. Sometimes you want some new gear, you know what I'm saying? And when you want that gear, you want that new swag, you want those looks. You don't always want to throw or fork over all that money from the sideline stores and the official stores. But you know what? There are some great T-shirts, and it's a sponsor of the show, mind you, at theclassyyinzer.com. If you've never checked them out, check them out on Twitter, at theclassyyinzer. Check them out on Facebook. Just search the Classy Yinzer, Y-I-N-Z-E-R. And they've got the funniest, best shirts that you'll see for Pittsburgh sports fans. We're talking the Steelers. We're talking the Pirates. We're talking the Penguins. One of my favorite shirts, right after the Cincinnati Bengals wild card win for the Steelers, it was a shirt that simply said, "The perfect ending." It's just great creative stuff like that you're not going to find. In their words, their shirts, Yins, aren't going to find downtown, as they'd say in Pittsburgh. So go and check out the Classy Yinzer. They sponsor the show. It's absolutely the best. And if you want a chance to win a free T-shirt, you're going to have to check out BehindTheSteelCurtain.com tomorrow. In the article where we're going to have this show embedded, you're going to find out details on how to win that free shirt from the Classy Yinzer. So make sure you check those guys out. But let's talk about the Pirates a little bit quickly before we sign off, Chris. Great April. They went out to the second-best April in club history. The last time they had such a great April, I think it was in 2013, and then back in 1992 when they went to the NLCS. Now, all of a sudden, they have kind of fallen off in the past few weeks or past few days. Just as of today, they got beat by right. They just got smoked by Jake Arrieta. I know that's a new storyline, new narrative for everybody out there. But the Pirates are struggling in certain areas. And before I go off on this, I'm going to give you the chance, give you the platform, give you the soapbox. Go ahead and talk about the Pirates, what you think, and then I'll go ahead and talk about what I think about the Pirates.
All right, look, Jeff and I agree on a lot of things, but he's really harsh on the Pirates, so I want to prepare all you Pirates fans with an optimistic view before he goes off on them. But my thing with the Pirates, I'm glad they started off with a hot April. I am pissed that they've dropped three straight now, even though, you know, the Cubs are really hot right now, and I get that. And the loss to the Reds was, you know, just an unfortunate loss at the end of a series where they already won. But, you know, right now the Pirates, they have to keep the Cubs in range. That is my biggest thing. If they can keep the Cubs in range with, like, 5 to 6 games back, which I believe now that after tonight's game, they're 6 games back of the Cubs. They put themselves in a position where come mid-May, come like a few more weeks, when they usually seem to turn it around, because the past, what, 3-4 seasons we've seen the Pirates make the playoffs, they have struggled in April. And then they spend the rest of the season trying to make up for what they did, what they didn't do in April. And each season you're just like, man, you know, maybe they're done. Maybe they're finished, because the record would be so bad and they'd fall throwback. And then in May, they would just get super red hot. And then June, they were just blazing. And then by July, they're smoking people. And then like last year where they ended with that amazing series against the Cardinals, that's the kind of stuff that brought them back. And they were, what, 2 games back from winning the division. They won 98 games last year. So don't forget that this team is they're moving forward from the position. And yes, they got rid of they got rid of Neil Walker, who was a fan favorite because he's from the Berg, went to Pine Richland. They got rid of Pedro Alvarez, who some liked him because of his power, but many didn't because he made errors every day, and sometimes twice a day. But you know, now they've kind of retooled the lineup. You know, they got McCutchen hitting in second, and he's hitting his early year slump. But what I like about the team right now is that they're not just relying on McCutchen. So many of the team's players are hitting above 300. I really like the way that Sean Rodriguez has been playing at the plate. He's 314. He's batting really strong. Rodriguez has 4 home runs. I did not see that coming from this guy. And is he an all-star right now? No, but he's certainly playing really well for a guy that we need as a pinch hitter because we haven't had pinch hitters for a while. Matt Joyce is coming off the bench really well. He's batting 387. He leads the team, though. He only has 31 at bats. He's a guy that I really like the way he's played. So he's another good addition. But, you know, Marte, he's batting in the fourth spot, 327. Mercer, 326. Harrison, 313. Polanco, 312. These are good averages. You know, if they can maintain this kind of hitting and the small ball, I think that eventually they start to piece it together. Because in the past, when the Pirates, and Jeff, you know this, in the past, it used to be the Pirates go as McCutchen goes. When McCutchen's in a slump, the whole team was in a slump. When McCutchen was hot, the whole lineup would make it so that the whole lineup would have more opportunities, and they would really live through McCutchen. And you still see it sometimes, like, you know, when he's the only player to get RBIs in a game. But you see now these different guys, they have better averages. They're improving. I think that's a good sign for Pirates fans everywhere that they have that. But the pitching still needs a lot of work. Cole still if he does not start hot, he cannot pull himself back together. I like Liriano, but Jeff Locke, oh my gosh, that is a problem. The only reason he's still here is because we really had no other options. I think that they really need to work. They need to get someone else in the bullpen. I know that, you know, we're supposed to let guys develop, but I just can't wait to see Ty Allen Glass now and see what they can bring to the rotation. Because you know, the Pirates, I think they need that. And when they get hot, they're going to need more than just Cole and Liriano and then the occasional, you know, decent start from Nice. He did not have one today. They're going to need more than that to make their rotation work. Two young guys that they can come in eventually and, you know, and provide those good starts. That'll help in the long run. But, I like what I saw in April, Jeff. And, you know, I'm not liking what I'm seeing in early May, but I'm trying to keep myself happy and optimistic by saying, hey, this team's going to pick it up. As long as they just keep the Cubs in range, they'll be fine. And come July, come August, and then eventually September, they're gonna be in a much better place than they were last year. So, ladies and gentlemen, get ready for this week's teed off segment from our own Jeff Hartman. Jeff, take it away.
You know, I'm glad you're optimistic, and I normally am. And if you follow what I write, if you follow what I say on our podcast, you talk to me in person or even through email, I'm a very optimistic person. But I don't see the train changing too much with the Pittsburgh Pirates. This team is dreadful in so many different areas. What they relied on, you were right, they relied a lot on Andrew McCutchen in the past. You know what really kept the team afloat in last year and the year before was pitching. Their pitching kept them in games, and then they were able to scrap enough hits to win. What's happening now? They're getting guys on base, running runners in scoring position, can't drive them home. Pitching is falling apart. In the past 2 games against the Chicago Cubs, they've been outscored 14-3. And they're probably, I would probably say if I'm a betting man, they're going to get swept tomorrow. These guys are the worst fundamental baseball team I think that I've ever seen in my entire life. All you have to do is watch Sunday's game where they were literally looked like the Keystone Cops out there booting the ball around, throwing it all over the place, making so many fundamental errors. Chris Stewart catches the ball at home plate, applies a tag. I was an all-state catcher in high school. All you do is you put 2 hands on the ball and tag the guy. 1 hand, ball comes out, they score a run. I'm so sick and tired of that. You see Polanco misplay ball after ball in right field. Marte's now making mistakes in left field. They don't know how to run the bases. This team sucks. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it just like that. Right now, this team sucks. Their pitching is not good. They can't run. As I said, they can't hit with runners in scoring position. They're horrible. And you, I don't know how they won so many games in April, but if they keep playing this way, they're not going to win many in May. And that's the sad thing, is that this team is built around just a few pieces. And even those pieces right now are struggling. We're talking about Liriano, who's kind of righted the ship after an early slump. Gerrit Cole does not look like himself. His breaking stuff has no snap to it. His off-speed stuff is not accurate. He's walking batters. His fastball is – he was throwing 94 miles an hour up until, like, the third or fourth inning yesterday. That's Jeff Locke territory. I mean, come on. I mean, eventually he got up to 98, 99. Gerrit Cole's a flamethrower. What's going on? Is he injured? Whatever the case may be, we can't be here as a fan base saying, I can't wait for Tyon and Glasnow to come up. Are we really expecting that kids from AAA to come up and be effective Major League Baseball pitchers? It doesn't work that way. If you are relying on that, just kiss your season goodbye because it's not going to go very far. Could the Pirates rebound? Yes. But what needs to start happening is they need to just become a better fundamental baseball team. It's frustrating to watch. As someone that played the game for a long time, it is really, really disheartening to watch the team go out there and make such stupid mistakes. The one thing I want to talk about last is that you saw tonight with Jake Arrieta on the mound just how big the gap is between the Pirates and the Cubs. In the standings, it's 1-2. But on real life, it's not even close. And you see the Chicago Cubs, and in the sport like Major League Baseball where there is no salary cap, this is the issue. The Pirates are not willing to spend money. And that is always going to be the issue. The Cubs, they go out and get Jason Hayward. They get Sean Lester. All these players that come in, and look at the young talent they have in Rizzo, and I can't remember the third baseman's name off the top of my head, but he's hitting the crap out of the ball. The Pirates don't have that. Who are they going to get? John Neese? Give me a break. Are you serious? Like, that's supposed to make me feel all warm and cozy inside when you get rid of your top two home run hitters and bring in John Neese, a possible fifth starter on a New York Mets team last year? That's ridiculous. That's laughable. You're slapping me in the face as a fan, trying to tell me that, oh, it's all okay, Jeff. It's okay. We brought in John Neese. Give me a break. That's horrible. That's ridiculous.
But wait.
I'm not stupid.
Why are they doing this? Why do they? Because people have been saying for years, we just need to go out and spend to get somebody. Why don't the Pirates? Because, you know, it's not like we're not selling out the ballpark, you know, the past several years. It's not like there isn't a market for the Pirates right now in Pittsburgh. You know, I understand we don't have the market of Chicago or Philly or New York, but, you know, the Pirates have to have some money to be able to go get somebody. You know, what are they waiting for? You know, do we really not have the money to go get somebody? You know, what's the deal there?
That's BS if they don't have the money, because revenue sharing, they're getting money from the Yankees and the Red Sox and all these teams that make almost billions of dollars. They have the money. They're just not willing to spend it. They are teams that say – they're the guys that say, you know what, we're going to build it from the draft. We're gonna build our farm system, which they were the number one team organization in the Major League Baseball last year, which I think is a crock of crap. And then they're going to say, we're just going to go out and get those diamonds in the rough. And they do that in more than one occasion. Liriano is one of those. He was kind of left for dead. They resurrect his career. You saw it even with like J.A. Happ last year, who wasn't here that long, but he certainly got himself a huge contract. They didn't go after Happ strong. Now they bring in guys like John Ajayso. Hey, that guy's playing great baseball. He's transitioning from catcher to first base, plays a good brand of first base. He's getting on base all the time. He's doing everything you want a leadoff hitter to do. But then you're not adding anything when you lose A.J. Burnett, and you're losing these pitchers that are solid inning-eater pitchers. It's just so frustrating. They can spend the money. They're just not willing to spend the money, and that's what's super frustrating. You know, you follow this team, and they're so bad for so long, and then all of a sudden they're good again. But it honestly seems like to me the organization is not fully committed on them getting over the hump. The Cubs are. The Cubs have lost forever. I mean, as long as you can remember, the Cubs have lost. And now all of a sudden, they're contenders, and they're not contenders, they're front runners. And it's because finally they say, you know what, we're going to make the right move, and we're going to spend the money the right way. And that's what I don't like about the Pirates. They're not willing to spend the money, and when if they do, sometimes it's the most asinine move they will ever think of. Think about, like, bringing in Ryan Vogelsong. What? Ryan Vogelsong?
Yeah.
The guy couldn't even beat out Jeff Locke. He's in the bullpen. That's pathetic. That's to me what the Pirates are right now. Can they fix it? I don't know if they can fix it in the immediate future, but it's going to be on their bats. The bats are going to have to outscore teams. They're not going to be able to handle these 2-1 games anymore. There's going to be more 6-5, 6-4 games, and it's going to be on the bats. It's going to be a lot of pressure on those guys, but you know what? We'll see if they respond. But I'm stepping off my soapbox now. Man, it's frustrating, to say the least. But, you know, the Pirates are frustrating. They are. They're just really frustrating to me. So, go ahead.
No, yeah. So, I'm looking at the Pirates, and I'm looking at a lot of things they have. You know, they are frustrating. But you know what, Jeff? You know, I know that you're more of a baseball guy than I am, but I'm just happy that they're competing. And I'm not saying that I'm just happy in the sense that I'm satisfied. Like, I don't want them to get better. I'm okay with where they are right now. But I'm glad to see them not get utterly destroyed. But we're gonna address some of our callers right now. That have called into the show. If you want to call in the show, you can call in at 347-850-8581, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. But we're going to address this person right here. We have a caller, 646-355-5738. You are live on the air for Black and Gold Blitz. Can we get your name and where you're from?
Hey, fellas, what's up? It's Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
Bryce from Brooklyn, welcome back to the show. He's called into the State of the Standard all the time. How you been, Bryce?
Yo, man, I'm doing good, fellas. How you guys doing?
Living large, brother.
Fellas, I've been looking for the podcast, and I just came on at the tail end, man, and I was glad to catch you before you went off the air since we're out of season. But I want to talk about our draft since I didn't get a chance to talk about it with you guys.
Mm. Yeah. All right, what's up? What was your take on the Steelers draft?
So, and I'm really interested to get you guys' take because I missed the beginning. But, you know, I gave our draft, if I had to grade it, I'm going to give it a solid B. I'm not going to give it an A. I think they got the most talented players they could for the needs that they had. I had Burns, just from my analysis, as a top five corner in the draft, but he was definitely number five. The other four guys were a little bit further ahead than him. I was surprised that Apple goes at 10, and I was hoping if it's between Burns and Joseph, I thought they would take Joseph, and I had no problems with that. But when Joseph goes off the board, fellas, at 14, I'm like, well, this tends to be – I think this is the best pick we can get right here. We got to meet in the corner. Why not go ahead and take the guy? So I think he's good. He's long. He's got speed. I like Davis and Hargrave, productive, fast players who can move for their positions. I like the Feeney pick. I think he's got some nice upside. I think the tackle's a good developmental pick. So no one that's going to come in day one and start, but I think people are going to definitely contribute this year because they got good production in college, and I think they got good value for what they picked. So I give it a B. What do you guys think?
Yes, I mean, for me, in my opinion, that's exactly the grade that I gave it, was a B. And I said this in an article that I wrote on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, was that the Steelers didn't hit any home runs in this draft. Like, I thought last year, 2015, I gave Bud Dupree, like, a home run hit. I mean, that was one that no one saw coming. He's going to be able to make a difference right away. They didn't hit any home runs, but I thought they got a lot of extra base hits. And if you know anything about baseball, you string together a few extra base hits, and next thing you know, you're scoring some runs. And so I think that if the Steelers can get some small contributions from some of these guys, like Sean Davis at safety, like Artie Burns at cornerback, Javon Hargrave, your top three picks essentially. And then maybe if you have a sub-package for Feeney to kind of run around and use his speed and versatility, if you can just get anything from these guys, that's a great draft. Because this team doesn't need that much. And I think that's what people forget. I mean, this is a 10-win team. They're going to be competing for the division. They've got an offense that, in my opinion, is second to none. All you need is just a couple small minor contributions, and I think this team is going to be favored to win the Super Bowl, which they already are. Chris, what do you think?
Like I said before, I'm excited for what they got. I want to see how these guys pan out, but I want the athleticism. I want the explosiveness. I think that that's going to define. I think when you go after that, you're not always going to hit. You're not always going to get the perfect guy. You're going to have misses. It's just natural with the draft. But we are going after the explosive players and not the guys that may just fit a mold like Jarvis Jones. I think you give yourself a better opportunity to get those players that can fit the mold, and you can create those secondaries, like what they tried to do this year, that can move all over the field, make the kind of plays that you want to see in the secondary, and then as well as on the front end, you know, create pressure, beat out teams, win games late with your athleticism, with your physicality, and overall just, you know, you want to show like, hey, we got faster guys. You can't just run around us. You know, we're going to be able to react quicker. We don't have to just keep the play in front of us. We can run with you down the field, which is something that Arnie Burns has shown that he can do in the collegiate level. You know, the question is, can he do it at the professional level? So that's my opinion. I gave it a solid B. I agree with you, Bryce, on that, man. So that was my thing. You got any other questions, Bryce?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys, you know, you talked about the athleticism of the draft, and I agree with you 100%. I want to get your take on this final pick they took, and I think he's very intriguing, this Matekovic player. Very productive. He just seems like a linebacker that has a nose for the football, and those guys are always tricky to grade because you just never know. I mean, the measurables aren't great, even though I think he's got some measurables, but when you got a guy that can just always knows how to play, knows where to be, gets there in a hurry – you know, that can mean he can do some good things for a defense. What do you think of that pick?
I mean, I think it's
my.
Go ahead, Jeff. My opinion, for a seventh round pick, you know, it's a solid. It's one of those picks that you could pick anybody, but they went after an award winning guy. He's a tough nosed dude. He's hard working. He's the kind of player that you want on special teams, and then eventually develop. You know. He's not really fast. He's not really big. He's not even really strong. But he's just like, he showed that he's a football player. He's a baller. Yeah. He's a guy that studies in the film room. And he's a guy that, you know, he's going to become, I think if he can stick with, he's going to be a fan favorite, and he can work his way on special teams. Jeff, you know, you were talking about that earlier. What was your feelings overall on I'm not even going to try to space again. The guy from Temple.
Matekovic, I think.
There you go.
Yeah, sure. That sounds good. Why not? I think that he's a value pick. I think honestly, he's a special teams guy. He's a guy that's going to bust his butt down the field. He's going to lay his body on the line. Think of Roosevelt Nicks last year. I mean, that's kind of what he did. He kind of carved a niche on the team through special teams, and then they started using him on offense more. Maybe that could be stemmed into a defensive position as well. Maybe it's a first backup behind an inside linebacker. We'll see. They need inside linebacker depth anyways. If he can kill two birds with one stone with getting a special teams ace and a backup linebacker. And in the seventh round, the last pick of the draft, then that's a good selection here. That's a good value pick, as you hear. That's like the big term now, is the value pick. Now, Bryce, I want to tell you, don't go throwing all your ammunition now, because Lance and I are probably going to be on tomorrow night. You'll have more chance to talk to us then.
Oh, I didn't know you guys were going to be on tomorrow night. I thought it was just, you know, you'd move Wednesday to Tuesday and you weren't going to be on for a while. Okay, that's good news.
No, this is a whole new show. This is just a new show for all Pittsburgh fans. We're talking about the Pens, the Caps. We're talking about the Pirates, everything. So tomorrow night, the standard will be on. You'll have to call in and then yell at Lance a little bit.
Hey, man, you guys fooled me, but it was good. I'm glad to see you expanding and doing different shows, man. That's great. You guys do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
All right, Bryce. Thanks for the phone call.
All right, then. Great. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, buddy.
You know, I was glad to hear Bryce, but we still haven't heard from our boy Vito Manco. I want him to come back someday. But you know who we do have on the line? We have our buddy Rich. Rich calling. He's been listening all show. Rich, we're glad to have you on the air. What did you want to talk about today?
Thanks, guys. Hey, listen, I don't live anywhere near Pittsburgh anymore, so I get very little news except, you know, from behind the steel curtain. And I read the article today about the undrafted free agents, and it reminded me a couple years ago we picked up a guy named Howard Johnson from some small college that was getting rave reviews, but I've never heard anything about him since then. Whatever happened to him?
Well, you know, Rich, it's funny. Howard Johnson, or Hojo, actually went to the small school that I went to college. It was Shepherd University. in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and he was released from the Steelers. They had to he hit the free agent of the waiver wire at the end of last at the end of the training camp when they had to cut down to 53 players, and he actually got picked up by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I believe he is still currently on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster. So if you're wondering where he went, he was one of those guys that made a lot of plays in the preseason. He was outside linebacker depth, special teams player. Someone else beat him out in terms of necessity for that roster spot. He goes on the waiver wire, gets picked up by Tampa Bay. That's where he is. The Shepherd University product is now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay, so the fact that he got picked up by somebody means he has to be what? On the roster or what?
Yes. He had to be put on a place on the active roster, which he was. And I believe he played special teams for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2015, last I checked. I haven't checked in a while.
Okay, but he wouldn't have filled that role for us, right? Or was
borderline? He could have, but I think when you're looking at a numbers game, you're looking at draft picks, you're looking at positions of need, it just the numbers didn't work out. And so a lot of times they're going to give a guy like him a chance to go play somewhere else. And so they put him on the waiver wire. And he got picked up. So there's sometimes we kind of have a little good for him. If he's getting a chance to play, then good for him.
Okay. Well, that brings up another thought. There's a lot of guys that ended up on the practice roster. Are those guys basically, is that their goal in life? I mean, is that their lot in life, or are they – they have guys on that roster that are eventually going to make the team?
Well, it depends on the position. I know that the one guy that was on the practice squad last year who actually got injured in the preseason was Eli Rogers, and a lot of people are expecting him to possibly grab the fifth wide receiver spot as well as a kick and punt returner. So he's the guy that was on the practice squad, could potentially make a hole for himself on the 53-man roster. Another player they spent last year on the practice squad was Jordan Dangerfield, who's a safety, and he spent time on the practice squad, and he's another one that could possibly find his way onto the field. So, you know, most of those guys bounce around the league if they don't stay with that one team, but I wouldn't necessarily say that that's where they're stuck. They're those mediocre talent guys that aren't going to guarantee a roster spot to themselves, and it just depends on the team and what needs that they have.
Okay. Well, you've hit on all the questions I have right now.
Well, hey, we thank you for the phone call.
Thanks for your time, man.
Yes.
I'm glad I saw that on the internet today.
Thanks for
calling.
Hey, hopefully
you listen every week.
Yeah, listen every
I'm going to try.
We listen every week. We'll be having the topics up. Thanks, Rich, for calling in. And to give you guys more information, you were talking about Hojo, Jeff. He actually had a decent year for a guy who was picked up off of a practice squad for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In 2015, he had 5 sacks, believe it or not, for the Bucs. He forced a fumble, recovered a fumble, and scored a touchdown for the Buccaneers. Played in 12 games total over the season, had 14 overall tackles. I mean, that's a decent year for a guy that, you know, wasn't supposed to really last. So your boy from Shepherd, you know, he's hanging tough. He's probably good. He's got a job, man.
He outplayed Jarvis Jones.
He really did. That's the crazy part. I'm like, you know what? We might not have to worry about this Jarvis Jones extension problem if we had been able to keep Hojo on the roster, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we have guys that we want to invest in. And, you know, Hojo, he looks good in preseason, but it's just, you know, it's tough to always get it right. The Steelers get it right so often. You know, a lot of people – you know, it's one of those things like, you know, Neil Coulon, I argued Neil down on the phone that Le'Veon Bell was better than Eddie Lacy, and he told me that I was so wrong and everything. And Neil, you know, he's the former editor at BTSC. He told me I was so wrong. He told everybody was wrong. After I think it was Le'Veon's, like, second year in the league, he was like, okay, I was wrong. Like, he admitted that Le'Veon Bell was a lot better than what he thought. Than what he thought. It was one of those things that the Steelers made the right decision so far in picking Le'Veon Bell over Eddie Lacy when the whole world was screaming Eddie Lacy because he just came off of Alabama, won the national title and everything. You can't get it right all the time with keeping Howard Jones on the roster because they have so many other players that they want to keep. And right now I like the way the roster's being run there, but, you know, hey,
At least you get to see a guy from your alma mater. He's still rocking in the NFL. He's still got a job.
Yeah, freaking Jarvis Jones. Good Lord. Anyways, that's a good spot to end the show tonight. Hey, we want to thank Frank Walker, attorney. Obviously, frankwalkerlaw.com, our sponsor. Make sure you visit that website if you have any need for Frank Walker. I kind of hope that you don't, but if you do, that's the guy to check out. And also Classy Yinzer, that's theclassyyinzer.com, as well as check him out on Facebook and on Twitter at theclassyyinzer. Remember to check out Behind the Steel Curtain tomorrow for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs, as well as a chance to win a free shirt through Classy Yinzer. This is our first show. Great show, Chris. I thought it was great. What do you think?
I enjoyed it. Glad we had some callers, and hope that you guys keep listening. Be sure if you're downloading this on iTunes, save our channel as the standard. You'll get all of the BTSC shows, including the standards and standard, as well as the Black and Gold Blitz. This is a good show. I like this, and I'm hoping that the Pens can give us a lot more to talk about in the coming weeks, Jeff.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Hey, check us out next week. Hopefully, the Pens have wrapped it up. If not, we'll be talking about it. We'll see you next time. Bye.